S-R-N. Yes, welcome to episode 18. Episode 18.
We're legal, dude.
Oh my goodness, of Cinema Crespo Diso. That is just wild. It is me, Christopher Crespo, film critic, writer, carpenter, auto mechanic. Did you know I do these things?
I had no idea, dude. You need to.
I catch sharks.
You got some work to do around this house, dude.
No, if you're
a carpenter, you got some work to do.
No, we rent. I don't do that stuff. We rent. That's Drewster Cogburn over there. How's it going, Drew?
Doing okay.
We're just hanging out, man, chilling. Ready for episode 18? You ready, dude?
Yeah, dude, I'm ready.
It's another one where it's just gonna be it's just you and me.
Sweet.
We're gonna chill. Two weeks in a row of no guests. We had a lot of guests for a while.
We had a nice little string of guests.
We had a string of guests. We're chilling out. For last week we chilled. This week we're chilling. Got guests booked for the next 2 weeks.
Sweet.
So you're going to have your work cut out for you, Drewster Cogburn versus the world style.
Fighting the world. It's going to be awesome. No,
don't worry. I got a sparring round for you later.
Oh, so great. Fantastic. Let's see if I can whoop my own ass again.
Let's keep those. Yeah, you did pretty poorly last week. I recapped that. I reviewed that.
It was terrible.
Yeah, not too good. But hey, it's a whole new week, whole new weekend, whole new Crespo Dome.
Yes, it is.
Whole new Drewster Cogburn versus the world sparring round edition. Fun for us.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's fun for people to listen to.
I enjoy it.
We enjoy it. So hopefully they'll enjoy our enjoyment.
I hope so.
Of it. But hey, we're going to... So let's get ready to get this show going. What we do every week, people. Just in case this is your first show, you're just checking us out. If you are, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Much appreciated.
What we do every week is we talk about the box office review, and we see what just came out. We do recaps of what just came out. Then we look at the new movies coming out this weekend, and then the Crespo Dome. Things get all crazy, and anything can happen in the Crespo Dome. But first, we do the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. I hope you guys are ready for that. Drew. You got the Netflix Instant Randomizer?
Yes, I have the Cinema Crespo Diso Randomizer 9000.
Well, then here we go. What do you got, Drew? What do you got?
I don't know. I have to verify, sir.
Oh, we're verifying. Netflix did just drop 2,000 titles from their library, and then they replaced it with stuff like Tron Uprising and expect you to be happy with that.
Yeah, I would not be happy with that.
Those jerks. Are you? What? Looks a little confused.
While Drew's checking, while he's verifying, you can always
go to chriscrespo.com to check out past Netflix Instant.
I'm pretty sure I know which one you mean, but I have two different movies with the same name.
All right.
but it was The Hammer. I'm assuming you're talking about the Adam Carolla one.
No.
Boxer?
No, because that's not on...
Correct.
That's not on the net. The Adam Carolla Hammer, where he's the amateur boxer. He's a carpenter turned amateur boxer going for the Olympics at the age of 40.
Yes.
Very good movie. I actually enjoyed that quite a bit. Not on the Netflix incident. I'm talking about the one about the deaf wrestler.
Yes, that is what I chose. So this week's Netflix Instant Pick of the Week is The Hammer, not the Adam Carolla one.
So you got the little
Yeah, it's on play.
Go ahead and read what it says there about.
Based on a true story, this drama follows the career of wrestler Matt Hamill, a keen athlete and avid student who is deaf. Raised by his hearing grandparents, Matt feels like an outsider in the deaf community, but perseveres with his dreams.
I saw this at not the last Florida Film Festival, but the one from 2012, I believe, Florida Film Festival. I saw it there. Good. It's a really good movie. Based on a true story, this guy is actually an MMA, professional MMA fighter now.
Nice. He can't hear anything.
He was born that way. And when he was younger, he grew up in a small community, so he didn't have anyone that could relate to him being deaf. His family was almost like ashamed of him being deaf. It was that type of thing. So he tried to live like as best as he could in that community, being shunned as a deaf person. Then he goes to a college that specializes in the hearing impaired, and then he...
It's an entire world of people like me.
But he does no. But that's the thing. He shows up. He doesn't know sign language.
Yeah.
He uses his talking voice to communicate with people, and apparently that's a big no-no in the like the deaf community. They want you to use sign language and not speak. It's kind of weird. So he was an outcast there. Everywhere he went, he didn't fit in.
Awesome.
Very strange.
Sucks for him.
But he became, he was a wrestler, a collegiate wrestler. Very, very good.
Took all that anger and put it into whooping ass.
Yeah. So it's a good movie. It's actually pretty good. And since it is, since the main conceit is that, you know, he's deaf, they do a lot, they play a lot with sound design. Okay. And, you know, to try to make you feel like, you know, or get the idea of what he's, not so much obviously hearing, but what he's sensing.
Yeah.
In his closed up auditory, what have you.
Interesting.
It's good stuff. Definitely not the, yeah, I know what chamber is. Let me write that down. All right, well, box office review, Drew, you ready?
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
What do you got? This is from boxofficemojo.com. This is where we get our numbers.
Number five this week, we have 42, which had a weekend gross of $4.65 million, a total gross of 84.7 on a budget of 40.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. I'm actually kind of surprised that this biopic about Jackie Robinson is still in the top five.
Yeah, it's been in the top five now for a little while. How many weeks has it been?
5 weeks.
5 weeks. Top five each week. Just hanging in there.
Yeah, just
making a little bit of money.
Struggling along.
Which is good. For $84 million for a baseball movie, that's actually very good. So, good for him. I'm sure everyone that made that movie is satisfied with that.
Of course.
But, all right, that's all we got.
All right, number four this week, we have Tyler Perry Presents Peoples, which had a weekend gross of $4.85 million for a total gross of the same on a budget of 15.
This is the lowest opening weekend for anything with Tyler Perry's name on it. He didn't direct it. It was written and directed by someone else. I guess like one of his protégés or whatever.
Okay.
But it's not a very good opening for Tyler Perry camp.
Well, I mean, it's up against some stiff competition.
And it has a I don't like that title.
Yeah. And Peoples.
And I saw the trailer once.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I can barely remember anything about it. Just Craig Robinson. Was in it. That's all. Craig Robinson's awesome.
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing him in This Is the End.
Uh-huh.
That's gonna be an interesting movie.
Yeah, it looks really funny.
But yeah, got none to say about Peoples.
Don't really care.
The Peoples.
At number three this week, we have Pain and Gain, which had a weekend gross of $5 million, total gross of 41.6 on a budget of 26.
Not bad.
It was a fun Michael Bay movie.
This is a movie that's going to make more of it, most of its money
on
international
DVD.
And on DVD, yep. home video, that type of market. Last week, I got into this movie compared to the actual article, the real story, and the differences. So if you haven't heard that, obviously I recommend you going back and check out episode 17, where we talk about Pain and Gain there. And then the episode before that, episode 16, we actually reviewed it.
Yes.
So
Pain and Gain. Listen to previous episodes.
All
right.
Because we got nothing to add.
Number two this week, we have The Great Gatsby, which had a weekend gross of $51.1 million. Total gross of the same on a budget of
$105 million.
Baz Luhrmann Presents.
We just saw this.
Yes, we did. Saw it this morning.
Pretty fresh.
Yeah.
So it's fresh.
Wicked fresh.
I don't mean the movie itself. It's fresh in our minds.
Yeah.
It was good. It was all right.
Catch it on DVD.
Yeah.
If you want to bother seeing it.
Yeah, we're already jumping to the ratings. It's definitely a red box.
Just jump right into it.
And it was cool seeing, you know, some of the big shots and all that lavishness on the big screen.
Yeah.
It was fun, but
it did. At no point in time was I like grasped by this movie.
It felt a little distant. It was weird, emotionally distant. Couldn't really relate so much. I don't know.
Yeah. And for the longest time, it just seemed like a really blown out of proportion music video.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like the whole movie.
Baz Luhrmann's movies are always like two steps behind a musical.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost a musical, but not quite. I definitely enjoyed Romeo and Juliet more.
Uh huh. Agreed.
And I think I felt more of like an emotional oomph to Moulin Rouge, which is another one of his.
I never saw it.
So it's not bad. Not a bad movie at all. This one, it's, you know, don't know. The things I like the most about it are how it looked.
Yeah.
I like DiCaprio.
Yeah.
DiCaprio's cool. Not really into Tobey Maguire in this movie.
I hate Tobey Maguire.
You didn't like him because of Spider-Man.
Well, no, I mean, that was the nail in the coffin, but this just reinforced it. I mean, just the way he acts and the way his face looks and everything, just everything about him. I'm not the biggest fan. I don't like Mr. Maguire.
I think he's okay.
Yeah, I disagree.
I think he's okay sometimes, but not this one, I don't know. It's like sometimes he's very wooden, you know, and kind of stiff, and always seems like.
And sometimes like he just looks like confused.
Yeah, like I was gonna say, he's like looking like a newborn baby.
Yeah,
like he's looking around, like what's this world that I'm in? It's kind of weird. But everyone else, I mean, I thought Joel Edgerton, the dude with the mustache, yeah, Daisy's husband, he was good. Jason Clarke, another. Obviously, Baz Luhrmann, the Australian, who filmed the movie in Australia. Most of it was filmed in Sydney, even though it takes place in New York City. That's why it has that very heavy CG look.
Yeah, because I guess a lot of it is CG.
A lot of green screen and whatnot. Australian Baz Luhrmann got the Australians, Joel Edgerton, and Jason Clarke. He was the mechanic guy, Wilson, who's been popping up in a lot of movies lately. He was in Zero Dark Thirty and Lawless.
Yes.
And something else. Anyway, of course it gets a bunch of Australians in there. Surprised Guy Pearson pop up.
Yeah, no, seriously, right?
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty.
It is pretty. It's very lush.
It's lush.
It's sparkly.
It's gorgeous. It's The Great Gatsby. It's 1920s New York.
It's got...
it's a boom era. Boom era.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a stuff
it's in got it. A soundtrack by Jay-Z. So,
music was cool. Music was fun. A lot of music, like you said.
Yeah, a lot of music.
Baz Luhrmann loves the music. So, there's no excitement here at all for that movie.
No, I really, it didn't, like I said, it never, at no point in time did the movie, like, grasp me and be like, you should keep watching this because, you know?
Yeah, it's just, you know, this guy loves this chick who loves that guy.
And they're all
loves this chick.
Piece of crap human beings.
Most of them are. Yeah, I guess they're all pretty shitty people.
Yep.
Kind of hard, like, yeah.
I mean,
bunch of shitty people.
I never read the book, so I don't know if this is a good interpretation of the book.
I think it's pretty straightforward.
It was required reading in high school, but I didn't read it.
All right, so I guess we both say it's a Redbox type of deal.
Yeah, check
DVD
it.
Type of deal.
I mean, if you want to
get it on the cheap.
If you want to waste your 2 hours.
$51 million, though, is an awesome opening weekend. Financially speaking, that's a home run for these guys. They were going to be happy with a $40 million opening weekend. So $50 million is like, woohoo!
Well, the ladies seemed to love it. There were lots of females in the audience.
They were there, but did they seem to love it?
I don't know.
I didn't get a sense of loving in there. Maybe they did.
Whether they loved it or not, they paid for it.
There was a bunch of laughing at what I assumed was supposed to be comedic moments.
Sure, if you say so.
Oh, they're just...
I didn't laugh.
People were laughing a lot in that. I was like, that's weird. Is it supposed to be funny?
I wasn't laughing.
Some of it didn't seem like it was supposed to be funny, but people were laughing. Weird stuff. All right, well, hey, Great Gatsby. $51 million. Good for them. It'll make another 20, 25 next weekend. Probably top out around one. Well, actually, Baz Luhrmann movies are not known for opening big. They're known for having longevity. So if it opened at 50, it could make like $150, $200 million just here. You know, $400, $500 worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be Baz Luhrmann's biggest hit.
No, man. So, it's really not that good.
Yeah, it's not that good, but I like him, though. He's got flair, style. He does his thing. He's an artist.
Yeah, definitely.
So, hell, he can do whatever he wants to do. This will give a studio an excuse to give him money to do something crazy. So, we'll
see.
All right, go on.
All right, and number one this week, we have the reigning champion, Iron Man 3, which had a weekend gross of $72.5 million, total gross of $284.9 on a budget of $200.
$664 million international puts it at $948 million worldwide.
2 weeks, and it's almost a billion-dollar movie.
Well, 2 weeks here, like 3.5 weeks worldwide, because it came out in other markets early, but yeah. Almost $1 billion already. It's just behind the Avengers. Avengers ended up making about $1.5 billion. This will top out around 1.3. We're looking at like the fourth biggest grossing movie ever. Because Avengers is 3, Titanic 2, Avatar number 1, as everyone knows.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. So yeah, Iron Man 3, another cash cow.
That's pretty crazy.
Ridiculous.
Man.
Speaking of clout earned from a movie making so much money, Shane Black is now taking his newfound billion-dollar clout with Iron Man 3.
Yeah, seriously.
And he's getting his Doc Savage movie made.
Put that on your freaking resume.
He's been wanting to the old... Have you know the old serial character, Doc Savage?
No.
Old comics from the back in the day.
Okay. Like when they were still strips and whatnot?
Yeah. He's been trying to get that a movie based on that character for a while. And now, thanks to Iron Man 3,
he can.
Someone's going to be like, all right, here you go.
Yeah.
Use your money to do it. So good for him. Good for Shane Black. It's a good movie.
It is.
We enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the hell out of it.
I think it's my favorite. It's my favorite. It's
my favorite Iron Man.
It's your favorite too.
Yeah, definitely.
That's not the case for everyone. But hey, it's an Iron Man movie. So.
And I like Ben Kingsley. I'm a sucker.
Ben Kingsley's great. Ben Kingsley is awesome in that movie. And then I really like what they do with the character. But hey, that's. My brother hated it, so there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you're not a fan of it.
What?
Of what they did with the Mandarin.
Yeah, whatever. I've gotten over it.
Have you?
I really wasn't that invested in the Avengers. The reason why I hated what happened with the X-Men so much is because I was so invested with the franchise.
True. That's true. I was never... Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I didn't mind.
I dig.
I didn't really care about Iron Man so much when I was a kid.
That makes sense. All right, well, let's look at the new movies coming out this week. Two movies coming out on DVD. Texas Chainsaw.
I don't really care.
I just find it surprising, not surprising, but interesting that they dropped Massacre from the title.
Well, it's because...
Is that a 2013 decision? People don't like massacres anymore?
What I think it is it's not trying to be like a remake or maybe an addition to it.
It was trying to be a sequel to the original.
Oh, okay.
That's what the intention of this Texas Chainsaw movie that just came out was supposed to be a direct sequel to, I think, the very first one.
Weird. Well, I'm so confused because there have been so many of these garbage Texas Chainsaw
movies. There's like three or four sequels, one of them with Matthew McConaughey and like Reese Witherspoon or something like that.
Yeah.
And then there were the remake ones earlier, like last decade, around the aughts, the double aughts. Ugh, those are
bad.
There's that one where it was like the family. Oh my good.
Yeah.
It was like a prequel, wasn't it?
Exactly. There were prequels and sequels and remakes. And it's just... The market has been flooded, and I just don't care anymore.
Well, here's another one, Texas Chainsaw.
Awesome.
It's out this week. Also coming out, Cloud Atlas.
Ooh, that was a great one.
We are definitely fans of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to it coming out so I can watch it again. It's a little over 3 hours, I think. It's 3 hours, maybe?
Does not feel like it.
It flies by. It's six stories mashed together, told at the same time. It's ridiculous.
It is an achievement in film.
It's got some of the hinkiest looking makeup.
Yeah.
I guess. For a movie that I love so much, it has some makeup that is like, ugh, I don't know. Like Hugh Jackman as an Asian. Not Hugh Jackman. Hugo Weaving as an Asian guy.
Yeah. Well, everybody as those like Asian type people.
Or some dudes were women. And that one, actually, they made that one Asian chick a Mexican.
Yep.
In that one scene.
Yeah, that was weird.
Weird stuff, but overall I love Cloud Atlas. So that's coming out this week. Very awesome.
Yes it is.
Looking forward to revisiting that. New movies in theaters, you got that, Drew?
There's only one summer, so there's only one there can be only one. May 17th, Star Trek Into Darkness. The new J.J. Abrams with Benedict Cumberbatch, Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, a bunch of other weirdos.
Simon Pegg.
Yes.
Zoe Saldana.
Uh-huh.
Judge Dredd.
Yes.
He's Bones.
He is.
See, now I'm going to watch Star Trek and just imagine him as Dredd.
I know. Oh.
Star Dredd into Darkness.
That would be awesome.
I just want more Dredd movies.
I just want to see Judge Dredd. You know, throw Judge Dredd in the Enterprise. See what happens.
Oh, see what happens. He'll steer that thing. Oh, bring the darkness, right?
Yeah, exactly.
On purpose. Into the darkness. This one, you know, the buzz is kind of hard to read. I'm seeing really? Some reviews for some people that are really not liking it, but then overall, I think the reviews are pretty good so far.
Well, I'm just hoping that it's going to be an awesome sci-fi action movie.
Yeah, regardless of whether you like Star Trek or not.
Exactly, that's what I'm looking for.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
So
that's not a Star Trek fan.
I mean,
the other one, the last one JJ did was okay.
Yeah, like I said, I mean,
it was all right.
I'm familiar with Star Trek lore, so
I love Wrath of Khan. I love that. Like Wrath of Khan, because it's a great movie.
Exactly.
Not just it's a great Star Trek movie. It's a great movie.
One with the whales was terrible.
The one with the whales. Any so movie bad. That you have to describe as the one with the whales, rule of thumb, it's gonna be terrible.
It was bad.
But this one, yeah, we'll see. Star Trek, for a while, I don't know how this falls into it. For a while, there was a thing where, I guess it's all the odd Star Trek numbered films are bad and all the even ones are good.
Yeah.
I think that's, it must be because Wrath of Khan is two. So. But I think the last one was supposed to be an odd number one, but it was still pretty good. I don't know if it broke the cycle.
Who knows? We'll find out.
They made so many of those freaking movies.
If that's the case, then as an even numbered one, this one should be better.
Star Trek is just one of those crazy franchises where, I mean, the TV show started, in the 60s?
Uh-huh.
The original show? And then it was off the air for a while. And then they did the movie with the original television cast.
Yes.
Which at that time was crazy. People were like, what are you guys doing? Made the movie. It was okay. I guess it was a little better than people were expecting it to be. Then obviously they did Wrath of Khan.
Yep.
Turns this big movie franchise. And then Star Trek Next Generation on TV. Like different iterations. That's when you get the Picard. And what's his name? The guy from Reading Rainbow?
Yeah. Whatever his name is.
Data? Is that the character name?
That wasn't him. But it was... Yeah.
Data was someone else. Yeah. There was a green skin guy.
Yep.
Who was the green skin guy?
Data.
That was him?
Yeah. He was an android.
Or about the Star Trek than I did.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Crazy. Deep
Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Right?
That's one. Star Trek Voyager.
Was that the one with Quantum Leap?
Scott Bakula? Oh, I don't know. I think that was another one.
He was in one of them, right?
Yeah.
Right? Scott Bakula versus Dracula.
Exactly.
Versus Blackula.
That sounds like a crazy fight.
We'll see. And then JJ's... I think he's already. He's got to be because it comes out in 2015. Working on Star Wars.
Yep,
he's
double dipping in the stars, man.
I don't know, man. I don't know if I like that.
We'll see.
I don't know if I like that. If there's a single lens flare in Star Wars,
you're gonna be angry.
That's gonna upset me quite a bit.
There's gonna be plenty of lens flares, dude.
Oh, son of a bitch. All right, well, that was the first half of the show. We're gonna take a quick break. Finish my beer. Gonna need to get another beer. Drew, do you need another beer?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Oh man, there's a terrible Aaron Eckhart movie coming out too.
What?
It's called Erased. I just want to read you the caption.
It's not a sequel to Eraser?
An ex-CIA agent and his estranged daughter are forced on the run when his employers erase all records of his existence and mark them both for termination as part of a wide-reaching international conspiracy.
Yeah, that is a sequel to Eraser.
Is it?
It sounds like it.
Yeah!
Aaron Eckhart's in the Arnold Schwarzenegger role.
Yeah! It looks really bad.
That's got to be limited. That's limited release.
I'm sure.
You'll be seen on the red box in a month.
Or maybe tomorrow.
Day and date. That happens. let's get into the... We're going to step into the Crespo Disco right here. Listen, I got a couple songs picked out.
A couple?
Yeah, a couple. You got a problem with that?
Well, I mean, how long is
we're going to take a long break. All right, I'm going to drink another beer.
Good Lord, sir.
So we're going to take a little break.
Settle down.
Got a couple
Simmer,
songs.
Simmer, bro. Simmer.
And these are actually very chill songs. They're very laid back. So everyone go home, and if you're already home, relax, chill, enjoy.
If you're not home, stop what you're doing and go home.
Stop what you're doing. Stop the show. Go home. Turn back on, relax, enjoy the break along with us. Crespo Disco. Here we go. We'll be back with the Crespo Dome in a little bit. And then I'll tell you on the other end what the songs are, if I remember to do so, because I think I forgot to do that last week.
These things happen. We get carried away.
So here we go.
Tangents and whatnot.
Crespo Disco. Enjoy. Thank you. Hey guys, this is Chris. We're just taking a quick break from episode 18 to bring you the following message.
Go to ChrisCrespo.com!
That's right, ChrisCrespo.com. Go there for things like my review of Iron Man 3, past Netflix Instant Picks of the Week, photo galleries with cool pictures, and my blog where I ruminate on several new trailers. Like, check out the trailer for Gravity. You want to see what a crazy, crazy movie trailer looks like? Go to ChrisCrespo.com and check out my little article there, my little quick blog post about the movie Gravity. You can also check out back episodes of Cinema Crespo. So you can also get those same episodes on iTunes if you're an Apple person. If you are an Apple person, then why don't you subscribe to us in the iTunes store? The show is free, after all. Free entertainment. Subscribe to us. Rate the show 5 stars. Leave a nice review. We really appreciate it. Tell your friends. Tell people to check us out. Tell people about ChrisCrespo.com. Because that's the only way the show is going to continue to grow and survive. Just with the help of people like you, PBS style. So thank you very much. We're going to head you back now to episode 18 for the conclusion of the show. Hope you're ready for the Crespo Dome, because it's about to get crazy. Welcome back to Cinema Crespo Liso, episode 18. 18 episodes deep.
That's a lot, dude.
Yet, not nearly enough. Because we're going to keep on going. It's me, Christopher Crespo, still here with Drewster Cogburn. How's it going, Drew?
Doing okay still.
Got our drinks refreshing. Well, I got my drink refreshing.
Nah, I don't need any more to drink.
Don't look at me with those judging eyes. I said, don't look at me with those judging eyes like that.
I wasn't even looking
don't,
at
don't,
you.
Don't look at me like that, dude. How dare you? I don't. those two songs in the Crespo Disco, the first one was from the There Will Be Blood soundtrack by Johnny Greenwood.
There Will Be Blood.
There Will Be Blood. Great movie. Johnny Greenwood, guitarist from Radiohead, got into making movie soundtracks for P.T. Anderson. So that's that song is called Prospectors Arrive. Very good. And the second song during the Crespo Disco was from the Drive soundtrack.
Such an awesome movie.
The song Oh My Love. Great movie. Great use of that song. Love it. It's all good stuff. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. It was a very relaxing time. But now it's time for the Crespo Dome. You ready, Drew?
I'm ready.
We got a lot to talk about.
We do.
We got a lot to do. I want to start talking about some movie trailers.
Movie trailers.
I mentioned in the commercial during the show that I wrote a little article on ChrisCrespo.com about the trailer for Gravity.
Oh, what a crazy trailer that was.
Holy cow.
Man, that is...
If at home, if you're at home and you have the ability to do so,
Stop
the show. Pause it. Go watch the Gravity trailer. It's a minute and a half.
All right, we'll give you some time to go do that.
We'll be here when you get back. All right, so we're waiting.
And we're back.
And we're back.
So are you?
We're back. Hope you enjoyed that trailer. I know you did.
It was awesome.
man,
wow,
it's ridiculous.
It is. I mean,
Sandra Bullock and George Clooney are astronauts working on a space station orbiting Earth. Horrible accident.
Something absolutely terrible.
Something
happens.
Destroys the space station. And they're stuck in outer space, floating,
grasping at straws,
floating above the Earth. The whole movie is about stranded astronauts trying to get back to Earth.
But they're not. It's not like they're like stranded in like their ship that's gone off course or anything. They are literally stranded in their suits in space. Worst fear ever.
Yeah, you said earlier it's like what's worse?
What's worse than being stranded on an ocean?
In the ocean.
Like literally, what's worse than being stranded in the middle of the Pacific Ocean? Being stranded in space. Oh, there's just it's nothing.
It's such a good the trailer is so well made too. It's really like a really good like it's in your face.
Yeah.
Like this is a movie trailer. This is a movie you're gonna want to see. This is how you make movies.
Exactly.
Alfonso Cuarón, the Mexican filmmaker who he made the best Harry Potter movie, I think, Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yeah, it was good.
His last movie was Children of Men in 2006.
Oh, one of my favorite movies of all time.
And it was 7 years ago this movie came out, so it's about time we got another film from this guy. And this looked ridiculous. Rumors of a 20-minute, like, one-take sequence at some point, which is pretty... Pretty exciting. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that Gravity trailer. Now, I'm going to ask you to take another pause real quick, take a quick break, and check out another trailer for the new Coen Brothers movie, a movie called Inside Llewyn Davis, L-L-E-W-Y-N. Inside Llewyn Davis. So go ahead, we'll stop, check out that Red Band trailer. It's a Red Band one, kids. Make sure you check that one out. Okay, we're waiting. And we're waiting. You're watching.
And we're back.
Welcome back, guys.
Awesome.
Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you enjoyed that Inside Llewyn Davis trailer. I think that's actually, speaking of well-made trailers, that's actually another
trailer. It's another well-made trailer. It's the Coen brothers, so, you know, it's...
Well, yeah.
The movie looks odd.
Yeah, so you already have something to work with. Like weird-looking characters and a weird story written and directed by them. It's, like, not based... Well, this one is very loosely based on some book.
Okay.
About a folk singer, like an autobiography of a folk singer in the 60s. But it's based on that book, like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It's based on The Odyssey.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Which the Coens claim that they never actually read.
Sure they did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They're jokesters.
Yeah.
They're jokesters. So Inside Llewyn Davis is a movie about a folk singer in like early 60s New York City, like the Village area, trying to make it. And Justin Timberlake is in it as like he's part of a trio of folk singers. Carey Mulligan, who we just saw in The Great Gatsby.
Yeah.
She's in it. She plays some sort of chick. I don't know what she's doing. F. Murray Abraham is the old dude that runs some sort of club. I like how the trailer builds up to he's like he's a singer, he's trying to get by in New York City, and then at the end some guy's like, all right, let me hear you play. Then all of a sudden he's like, can he play?
We don't even know.
It's very interesting.
He didn't play a single note in the trailer.
I think it's he has a record though. He has a whole record.
Apparently.
I think it's a very intriguing trailer. But then again, it's the Coen brothers, so I'm on board for anything.
I wonder if he's ever gonna play a single note in the whole movie.
That'll be interesting. We'll find out. Do you remember, did it have a release?
I don't think it didn't have a release.
I think it just said this fall.
Yeah.
hasn't even debuted yet because the Cannes Film Festival has that. I don't think that's happened yet.
I don't know.
No, it has not. It's coming up very soon. The Cannes Film Fest, and it's playing there in competition.
Man,
so we'll see. We'll get word pretty soon.
We should find a way to get into Cannes one year.
Yeah, with our press credentials.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No problem. That's the easy part. I think it's getting over here. That's the hard part, at least for us.
Yeah.
All right, and one more trailer for everyone to check out. We saw this one today, and
yes,
I was intrigued by it. It's a trailer for a movie called
Captain Phillips.
Awful, awful name.
It is, but
we'll talk about the name in a second. Go watch that trailer, Captain Phillips. All right, and go. Right. So how's it going, Drew?
Yeah. These trailers were pretty good. I hope they enjoyed the ones we did.
I hope they're enjoying them.
And we're back.
Hey, hope you enjoyed Captain Phillips' trailer. That one, it doesn't say explicitly in the trailer. It just says from the director of like two of the Bourne movies, the second two. It's Paul Greengrass.
Okay,
is the director. The dude specializes in movies like trying to blend realism, documentary style realism, with his narrative. His first movie, Bloody Sunday, is a great movie. It's on the Netflix Instant. It's about the troubles in Ireland in the 70s.
Yep.
The Bloody Sunday massacre of the protest, the parade. It was ridiculous. Then he did the Bourne movies, where he added that really shaky cam aesthetic, but he's the one who does the shaky cam stuff the best. Everyone else is trying to copy him and doing it poorly. He does that really well. The Green Zone movie he did with Matt Damon.
That was kind of documentary style.
That's his thing. A lot of, the camera, it's supposed to feel like it's really there. It's really happening. United 93.
Didn't see it.
He has experience with movies about hostages and stuff like that. So Captain Phillips is a movie about a couple of boats of Somali pirates.
Yeah, the Somali pirate story.
Taking over
a ship
and some guy.
With Tom Hanks
as Captain Phillips. All unarmed people on the ship.
Yes.
They have now taken to all those boats and those waters. They now all have armed guards on them.
Oh, I'm sure.
The piracy rate has dropped quite a bit in the last year or two.
Well, yeah, when they have people shooting back, they don't want to rob those people anymore.
They finally found a way to combat that stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
But it looks like an intense movie. It looks good. I'm into it. I really like Paul Greengrass.
I really like Tom Hanks.
So I thought those are a trio of some pretty good trailers out there. We got some good looking movies coming out that we didn't even really talk about that much in our summer guide or the preview of 2013.
Well, didn't really know.
Sometimes the information comes to us late.
Exactly.
But it's here now. Captain Phillips is an awful name. I don't like movies, with very few exceptions, though I like movies named after a character in the film. Like Rocky. Okay, Rocky works. But then again, it's just Rocky.
The Scorpion King.
Yeah. That's more of a title, though. I'm talking about, like, Michael...
It's also the name of the character.
I'm talking about names like movies like Michael Clayton, all right? Or Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
Where it's just a freaking name.
Uh-huh.
It's just a name. John Carter.
The Lone Ranger.
All right. Not even John Carter of Mars. At least there you're adding a descriptor.
No, it was just John Carter.
Just John Carter. Ugh. Jack Reacher was originally called One Shot, but then they changed it to Jack Reacher.
Should have stayed with One Shot.
Hancock, the Will Smith superhero movie.
Drunk superhero movie. Ugh. Yeah,
should have called it Drunk Superhero Movie. That was better than Hancock. I mean, I just don't like movies that are just named after just a person.
Yep,
very annoying. When the name of the movie came up at the end of the trailer, I was like a little deflated. I was like, really? You gotta go see Captain Phillips.
Yep,
it sounds like Go see Captain Phillips on the Lido deck at 7 p.m.
He could be there, dude.
I don't know. All right, so that's a trailer something to talk about. A couple of DVD reviews. Drew.
Yes, sir.
Saw a couple movies this week.
Yes, I did. A
couple of Academy Award winning films.
Yes, I did. That I didn't get to see pre-Oscar. So,
which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's go with The Life of Pi.
Life of Pi.
Because it was the most recent.
Winner of Best Director for Ang Lee.
What's up?
Go ahead.
I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah.
It was visually stunning.
It's gorgeous.
It was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I think it. Did it win Best Cinematography? It might have.
I don't know.
I think it might have.
I was blown away to find out that some parts I knew that the tiger was fake
but sometimes it looks so amazing.
But there were some parts that I thought it actually was a real tiger, and only until you told me that it was completely all CG did I kind of freak out a little bit.
It's a little ridiculous.
Even
rewatching the movie the second time,
wow,
knowing it's fake 100%, there are times I'm like, maybe.
maybe it is real.
Maybe they snuck a real tiger in for this one shot because that looks ridiculously good.
Yeah.
That itself is a reason enough to watch the movie. Richard Parker?
Yeah.
Richard Parker.
Richard Parker.
I love that. I love that the tiger's name is Richard Parker. I like watching it the second time around. I liked more all the backstory stuff because it takes like half an hour, 40 minutes just for him to get onto the freaking water.
I mean, hell, those tea fields, the panoramic shot of the tea fields was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. It took a lot of time in the beginning with the family and the character of Pi. And a lot of ruminating about religion and using religion in one's life and thinking rationally.
Yep.
And the first time around, I was like, I don't know about this stuff. I want to see a kid in a boat with a tiger. But the second time, it definitely, you know, it's all there for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's character building. It has resonance for the rest of the movie. It's funny when he's on the boat and because, you know, he's a character who he's a Christian, Muslim,
Hindu.
And he also, he teaches a course in Kabbalah and does this and
that. No, he's Catholic, Muslim, Hindu. Not just Christian, Catholic.
Yeah, he did go Catholicism. Boy. So at one point, he's thanking God for saving him. Then at another point, he's thanking Vishnu for giving him, for supplying fish, you know, while he's stranded at the... It's kind of interesting. It's funny stuff. So you liked it, though.
No, I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was eye candy with a soul.
So would you have seen it in theaters if you could go back and do it again?
I wish I could have seen it in theaters. And if it was in 3D, that would have been even cooler.
Oh, it definitely was 3D. Did you notice in that one scene with the flying fish scene, the black bars increased.
Yes.
So that the fish could then, probably leap
through.
They passed in front of the bars to increase the 3D feeling in that one scene. Very weird.
Yeah, I did notice that. It was kind of weird.
It's kind of weird that they kept it for your 2D at home viewing. You know, all of a sudden the screen shrinks a little bit, and then the fish are
and then it goes back.
Flying out of your TV, and then it goes back. Yeah. All right, so there you go. That's your Life of Pi review. And what's the other movie?
I saw Silver Linings Playbook this weekend as well.
What did you think of the Silver Linings Playbook?
I mean, I enjoyed it. It proved once again that Bradley Cooper can act if he wants to.
He can,
which is surprising.
He's really good in The Place Beyond the Pines, dude. He's good.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, it was good seeing him and Mr. De Niro back together again.
Yeah.
They were good in Limitless.
Actually, they were both better in this.
Yeah,
De Niro is a lot better, I thought, in Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, definitely.
He's been in a while.
Yeah. He actually had some emotion.
There's that one. Yeah, exactly. He's crying and stuff. And when was the last time De Niro cried in a movie?
When was the last time he freaked out in a movie?
Yeah. Well, I think that Bean Flynn movie, which I haven't seen yet.
I didn't see it.
Where he plays a homeless writer, Paul Dano's his son. Was it that movie where Bradley Cooper auditioned to be his son? It was either that or another movie. Bradley Cooper auditioned previously to play De Niro's son.
In something.
In another film.
Yeah.
And then he got to do it in this one. Yeah, fulfill the lifelong dream, that Bradley Cooper.
Yep.
Directed by David O. Russell.
D.O. Russell, No, it's...
That's good.
I guess it's maybe one of his softer movies.
It's a romantic comedy of sorts. A romantic, dramatic...
Rom-drom-com.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's definitely mixing a lot of genres in there, which is cool. Yep. I like that.
Jennifer Lawrence is hot, as always.
Apparently, David O. Russell told her to put on weight for that movie.
She still looks fantastic.
Fantastic. She looks so thin. It's crazy. And she's like, you got to put on weight, lady. You're scaring us.
Yeah.
But she's really good. I mean, she won... did she win? Yeah, she won for that. Yeah. Best Actress. Uh-huh. She won for that. So that's the award that movie won. It was also nominated for Best Picture, Best Director. Actually, it was the only one nominated for Best Picture, Director, Actor, Actress, Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress. All five.
Everything.
Yeah.
The whole shebang.
The Big Five is what they call those awards. It was the only one in the last Oscars that nominated for all those, but one for Best Actress. Good stuff. David O. Russell, man, he's on a streak with that and The Fighter.
Yeah.
He's doing good.
He is. He's a capable director.
His next movie now is based on the app scam scandals in Boston a while back. Re-teaming with Bradley Cooper, I think, again. Jennifer Lawrence. Who else is going to be in that one? Another set in Boston film. I think Mark Wahlberg might be coming back for that. Mark Wahlberg originally was going to play the Bradley Cooper role in Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, okay.
But for whatever reason, that didn't happen. Yeah. So that ended up being Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, good for him.
Worked out for everyone involved.
Yep.
So how about that one? How would you have rated that one if you had a chance to see it in theaters? Would you have liked to have seen it in theaters? Are you fine with just seeing it on
DVD? I'm fine seeing it on DVD.
Definitely DVD type movie for you. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, it's just a little romantic drum-com.
Exactly.
Just a little rum-drum-com.
Little rum-drum-com.
All right, cool. We're glad you got to catch up with those movies. That's got that out of the way there.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. I wanted to talk about this article, this New York Times article that I read recently. Oh, I dropped that piece of paper. I'll get it later. You see all this highlighted stuff, notes? This is going to take a little bit.
Okay, let's do this.
There's some good stuff here. This is from New York Times article from May 5th by Brooks Barnes. The article is called Solving Equation of a Hit Film Script with Data. All right, check this out. The same kind of number... Check this out. You ready?
I'm ready, dude. Are you ready? That is the question.
The same kind of numbers analysis that has reshaped areas like politics and online marketing is increasingly being used by the entertainment industry. Netflix tells customers what to rent based on algorithms that analyze previous selections. Pandora does the same with music. And studios have started using Facebook, quote, likes and online trailer views to mold advertising and films. Now the slicing and dicing is seeping into one of the last corners of Hollywood where creativity and old-fashioned instinct still hold sway, the screenplay. So basically, you know, Netflix, when you rate movies on Netflix, depending on what you watch, it has an algorithm that it's like
your
account.
Yeah, it recommends stuff for you.
Yeah, trying to make it easier. And actually, I've been using Netflix for a long time. I've rated thousands of titles on there. So it gives me the recommendation. They think I would give it 2 stars, 3 stars, 4 stars. It's quite accurate. It's rare when they say you're not going to like this, and I watch. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is good. It's very rare. Usually, I'm like, all right, you guys are right. This is not something I was going to appreciate. And then vice versa. It's pretty surprising. But now they're going to do that from the script level. I don't know. Here we go. Back to the article. A chain-smoking former statistics professor named Vinny Bruzzese. You already know you're in a bad spot when the guy's name is Vinny Bruzzese. Vinny Bruzzese has started to aggressively pitch a service he calls script evaluation for as much as $20,000 per script. Remember that number, $20,000 per script. Mr. Bruzzese and a team of analysts compare the story structure and genre of a script with those of released movies, looking for clues to box office success. His company also digs into an extensive database of focus group results into similar films and surveys 1,500 potential moviegoers. So they compare scripts for movies that haven't even started production to finished movies, and they try to compare them. Like, hey, look, this...
That sounds ludicrous.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, I do.
Let's see what Mr. Bruzzese has to say about that. Quote, demons in horror movies can target people or be summoned, Mr. Bruzzese said, by way of example. If it's a targeting demon, you are likely to have a much higher opening weekend than if it's summoned. So get rid of that Ouija board scene. Bowling scenes tend to pop up in films that fizzle, he continued. Therefore, it is statistically unwise to include one in your script. Quote, a cursed superhero never sells as well as a guardian superhero. One like Superman who acts as a protector. So he'll read your screenplay with his analyst and he'll give you a 20 to 30 page report with things like that. Like, oh, well, you have these elements in your movies. Well, these elements are in these other movies that flop. So we want you, if you want your movie to be successful, you take this out. Oh, you have a bowling scene
in your
movie? So no bowling. Because The Big Lebowski and Kingpin didn't do well. So you can't have a bowling movie.
But The Big Lebowski is amazing.
42 just made $80 million. Why don't you change that to a baseball scene, buddy? That's what they're thinking. All right? We're going on. And, you know, this isn't that different from their... Script doctors have been around in Hollywood for a long time.
Yeah.
And that's nothing new.
Uh-huh.
But a script doctor is just reading a screenplay on its own merits, and then their person with their own knowledge is trying to figure out how does this screenplay work on its own, and how can I make it better? They're not comparing it to old movies and other screenplays and trying to fit into some sort of formula.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like, you know, a writer sending his stuff to an editor, you know? Like,
that's one thing. Yeah, that's another set of eyes.
Exactly. It's like, hey, dude, I wrote this. Check it out. What do you think?
What do you think? Give me some opinions.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But then to go through a whole rigorous analysis with...
For 20 grand...
Back to the article. Many top screenwriters reject Mr. Bruzzese's statistical intrusion into their craft. No shit, guys. Quote, this is my worst nightmare, said Ole Parker, writer whose film credits include the recent The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. Quote, it's the animal of the animal. try it again. It's the enemy of creativity, nothing more than an attempt to mimic that which has worked before. It can only result in an increasingly bland homogenization, a pell-mell rush for the middle of the road. Mr. Parker drew a breath. Look, I take a suggestion from my grandmother if I thought it would improve a film I was writing. But this feels like the studio will listen to my grandmother before me, and that is terrifying. So obviously, screenwriters are kind of against this.
Yeah, I can see why.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
And I consider myself a bit of a writer.
You are.
I dabble.
A bit of a writer.
I've been pounding away at typewriters since I was like 7.
Yeah.
Stuff like this kind of makes me, it kind of gets my goat. That's why I wanted to bring it up. Let people know, hey, you want to support movies? This is what this is some of the stuff that you're supporting when you watch these really middle of the road mainstream films. You know that these ones are obviously cookie cutter products. They're not movies, they're products.
Yes.
This is what this is going to produce, more product instead of more movies. But there's always a flip side. All right, so listen to this. A lot of producers, studio executives, and major film financiers disagree, a.k.a. the people with the money.
Everybody, yeah, the people who are paying for the movies.
People who pay for the money disagree. Although they have quietly hired Mr. Bruzzese's company to analyze about 100 scripts at 20 G's a pop. 100 scripts, including an early treatment for Oz the Great and Powerful, which has taken in $484 million worldwide. I don't know if that's necessarily good, because Oz Great and Powerful costs about $200 million.
Yep.
Add another $100, $150 to marketing. That puts it about $30 million in the green. That's your example, guys, of a successful film? I don't know. Here we go. Positive, someone talking good about Mr. Bruzzese's company. Quote, it takes a lot of risk out of what I do, said Scott Steindorf, a producer who used Mr. Bruzzese to evaluate the script for The Lincoln Lawyer, a hit 2011 crime drama. Everyone is going to be doing this soon, he added. The only people who are resistant are the writers. I'm making art. I can't possibly do this. That's him making fun of the writers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. He's a jerk. Okay, now this, I just wanted to point out this one paragraph in this article because it doesn't make any sense. It does, but at the end it doesn't. Audience research has been known to save a movie, but has also famously missed the mark. Opinion surveys indicated that Fight Club would be the flop of the century. It took in more than $100 million worldwide. That is a weird example to use.
Yes, it is.
Fight Club was a huge flop here domestically. It made about $20, $30 million here in the States. The executive who greenlit Fight Club at Fox was infamously fired for greenlighting that movie. So it was not a hit. Audience research was right. Fight Club is not for the, was not for the masses. It was not going to be a huge runaway hit. Oh, that's just weird. I don't know what this...
Strange.
I don't know what this guy's doing. All right, one last thing here. One Oscar-winning writer who, at the insistence of a producer, had a script analyzed by Mr. Bruzzese, said his initial worries proved unfounded. It was a complete shock, the best notes on a draft that I have ever received, said the writer, who spoke on the condition of anonymity, citing his reputation, which is hysterical. Some writer's using it. He's happy with what he got, but he's embarrassed to put his name behind that statement. He's embarrassed to say
that's kind of weird.
He used the script evaluation company, paid him $20,000 to compare his script to successful movies and movies that flopped.
Yeah.
And try to get him to tailor it to mimic past success. Oof.
That is so strange.
I don't know. I mean, Drew, what?
I consider myself a bit of a creative person. You know, I've always had a creative streak, you know, whether it be through graphic design or through cooking or whatever it is that I do.
What if you had a little graphic design company up and running and, like, you were very confident in your work that you're putting out, and then someone was like, I want you to give me a piece of art, but then I want you to run it through past these people who are a bunch of accountants, and they're going to look at other graphic design pieces of marketing and see if, compared to other successful, you know, like... Comparing you to past work of other people.
Yes.
How would that make you feel?
It doesn't make me feel good.
As a creator of a piece of art.
And like I said, it doesn't make me feel good. It makes me think that you don't have any faith in what I'm doing.
Right.
In which case, why did you hire me to do this in the first place?
Why did you hire me to begin with? That's a good point. Right?
Yeah.
So that's what's happening out there in Hollywood. In the increasingly cash-strapped Hollywood. So that's why, you know, we're going to keep getting more Spider-Mans and... And Marvel movies and
Well, I mean, I don't mind comic book movies. They're always fun.
Yeah, but you know
but
what
they're not.
You know what I mean. You know what I mean. All right. Well, that brought us down a little bit. So let's see. Our, you know what? Yeah. Drewster Cogburn versus the World.
Sparring round.
Sparring round
two.
Like I said, got a couple of
Yeah, I got.
You got guests coming in the next couple
for
of weeks.
Next week.
So I got the game right here, buddy.
All right, let's do this.
A game that you haven't seen, you have no idea what
it is. I have no idea what's going on. I never do.
All right, so here we go. I have to actually read this piece of paper to remind myself of what a game is. Okay, the name of this game is Coppola's, Baldwin's, and Sheen's. Oh, my.
Oh, man, that's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people. I'm going to give you the 10 movies. You have to tell me if it's a movie with a Coppola,
a Baldwin, or a Sheen.
Or a Sheen.
Okay.
Very self-explanatory.
Okay.
All right, here we go. And let's do it this way. All right, number one, The Dead Zone.
I cannot remember this freaking movie for the life of me.
You can't remember it?
I cannot remember it for the life of me. I'm going to go.
I'll give you a little bit of help. A little bit of help with the sparring round. Christopher Walken movie from the early 80s?
Yeah, well, yeah, I know Walken.
Okay.
He's the only person I can think of in the movie.
Okay.
Coppola.
You do, when you take a guess, you do have a 30% chance, 33%, yeah, 0.3 yeah. chance. So, but no, you're wrong. I'm sorry. Martin Sheen.
I was going to say it was Sheen.
Martin Sheen plays a guy who he's running for some sort of political office.
Yeah,
actually, I think president at the end. He's running for president.
Nice.
All right, number two, here we go. Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. Does that movie feature a Coppola, a Baldwin, or a Sheen? Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Coppola? I don't know. I have no idea.
No, I'm sorry. It's a Baldwin.
It's a Baldwin.
And it's Daniel Baldwin.
Oh, of course.
Very small role in that movie. I think he played a cop. All right. Number three, Trespass. Trespass.
Sheen.
I'm sorry.
Baldwin, wasn't it?
It's a Coppola.
Oh, man.
It's a Nicolas Cage movie from a couple years ago. Nicolas Cage and Nicole Kidman. And
it is a piece
of shit, let me tell you.
Awesome.
All right, so far you're 0 for 3.
Well, it's because I haven't...
Maybe
so
you need the other person there. Maybe you need that sense of competition to push you. Here we go. Let's see. Let's find out. The fourth film is Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Does that feature a Coppola, a Baldwin, or a Sheen?
Man, seen that movie too. Is there? I don't think there's a Sheen in the movie. Or is there? Man, I'm so terrible at this. we're gonna go with a Sheen.
Sorry, it's a Baldwin.
Baldwin.
Billy Baldwin.
Billy.
Billy Baldwin's in that one. I think he plays a detective. Usually, if a Baldwin's in, he's playing some sort of cop. The fifth one, this is kind of, I think this is a gimme.
I hope so.
No pressure. I think this is a gimme. Number five, Being John Malkovich. At home, there are some people who are like, I know this immediately.
I'm sure a lot of people know the answers to these questions, and for some reason, my brain is not working today. Coppola.
Charlie Sheen. There's a scene where Charlie Sheen shows up at John Malkovich's house and is playing himself.
I'm sure.
And he's giving talking about his problems. He's like, were you high? And John Malkovich is like, well, yeah, I was high, but that doesn't have anything. It was like Charlie Sheen pre-meltdown Charlie Sheen, but it still fit the mold.
Yeah.
You're over five, buddy.
Yeah.
Number six. Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace. Did it have a Coppola, a Baldwin, or a Sheen?
Really?
Yes.
Man. Baldwin. Please. No.
Sofia Coppola has a very small role. She's in makeup and
can't tell it's her.
Can't even tell it's her.
I see. That's what I was thinking. That's why I was just stabbing in the dark.
Stabbing in the dark. And number seven, the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. Does that feature a Coppola, a Baldwin, or a Sheen? Sp- SpongeBob SquarePants movie, which I endorse.
I love the movie. I saw it.
Great movie. I saw it in theaters.
Man. Baldwin.
That's correct!
Yes.
Alec Baldwin was one of the voices.
Finally.
All right. And it was an Alec one, too. Good job. Number 8. The Flintstones and Viva Rock Vegas.
Oh, that was Baldwin. That stupid one with the yellow hair played Barney Rubble.
Yes, very good. Stephen Baldwin played Barney Rubble. Very good.
I remember that.
Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story. That's the you remember the movie?
Yeah. Man, Coppola.
That is correct. I know that was a guess though.
It was.
Jason Schwartzman, who is a Coppola.
Is he?
Yes, he played Ringo when they had the Beatles.
Oh, yeah.
And he was Ringo. Yeah, he's a Coppola. Son of Talia Shire, who's Francis Ford Coppola's sister.
All right, there we go.
Talia Shire, who's Adrian in Rocky, Rocky movies. And also played Jason Schwartz's mom in I Heart Huckabees.
Correct.
All right, so yay!
Said
Coppola, right?
Yeah.
So that's three.
Three.
You got the last three in a row.
Nice.
Turn it around.
Duh.
A somewhat respectable score here if you can get this last one.
That is no near
somewhat respectable if you can get this last one. You ready? I think this one's actually kind of easy too.
Awesome.
Mission Impossible.
First one. Sheen? Was Martin in that?
Sheen's correct, not Martin. Emilio Estevez was part of the team in the beginning that got wiped out. Remember, he was
on
top of the elevator,
yeah.
And then he got
totally
some things in his
right.
face.
Yeah.
Got spiked in the face.
You're right. Emilio Estevez did get spiked in the face.
But he did say Sheen. So you got 4 out of 10, which considering your 0-6 start, not bad.
Yeah. still nowhere near respectable.
Oh, boy, buddy.
I'm beating myself up.
You're at 2-2 so far in Drewster Cogburn versus the world. We got the guests next week. Don't let yourself fall under 500, man.
No, oh, man.
We're gonna have to set something up. Like we'll reset the score like every year.
No. There's gotta be a running. Well, I mean, we can reset it, but I would like to keep a running tally for all time.
Well, for the year. Oh, okay. An overall score,
of course.
Because I'm thinking that at the end of the year, if you win,
I'll be the champion.
You'll be the champion.
And then if not,
then you should get something. We should do something for you. You should get some sort of award.
We'll get some sort of championship belt or something.
Something like that.
Something silly.
But if you finish under 500.
Well, somebody else gets the belt.
I think
it's... Are you telling me what, you're going to punish me?
I think you should be a little held responsible for your performance, you know?
So you're going to punish me if I lose.
Well, we can't reward the whole world now, can we?
No, we can reward somebody, though.
We can either reward the whole world, or we can punish you for losing. And I think that second part's going to be a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
We'll send you to space.
Awesome.
And then we'll blow up your ship, and we'll have you float around 300 miles above the Earth's surface.
If I survive, I'll come back to kill you.
No, we'll do that if you win. If you lose, we'll still figure out the punishment. If you win, that's what we'll do, send you to space. All right, I got a few questions.
Awesome.
All right, from some peoples. At Junk Culture Inc. on Twitter asked, because I asked, I was like, hey, don't have any questions? This was his question. At Junk Culture Inc. asked, if Craig and Smokey needed $200 on Friday, why didn't they sell Craig's gun? Stupid Craig had that stupid gun.
That whole time.
They could have flipped that thing for a couple $100 easy.
Easily, yeah.
Easily.
Oh, I mean, they could have used it to rob somebody and it would have been a totally different movie.
He could have done many things with that gun to get some money.
Yeah.
Junk Culture Inc. points out a very interesting little hole in Friday. But then again, it's Friday. One's going to Friday for classes on script analysis and plotting. Great movie, though. I love that movie.
Oh, fantastic.
I love that movie. Joe, my brother, previously asked in another episode, he had us do Terminator versus Robocop in the Presper Dome.
Yeah.
He's updated that.
Okay.
He wants Terminator versus Robocop versus the Predator.
So Terminator versus Robocop
versus
the Predator.
Three-way dance.
Do we remember who won the first one? I don't.
I think we gave it to the Terminator. I think we did.
We gave it to the Terminator?
Because of the Terminator.
Yeah. Well, I think... Well, I mean, in all reality, it all defaults back to the Terminator again because the Predator loses points because he's flesh.
That's what I was thinking. He's still a big old sack of meat and bones.
Exactly.
That can be destroyed with a
yes.
nice placed laser blast.
Exactly. Like
sort.
I said, the Predator is flesh, so he automatically, bottom of the barrel, he loses.
RoboCop has some flesh.
That's why he's second place.
And a brain. Terminator is just Terminator.
Like I said, all machines survives it all.
All machines are the future.
Yeah, yeah.
When the robots take over.
Exactly. I mean, it's going to happen if it hasn't already. We could be in the Matrix right now. They could be sucking our life energy
from us. I, for one, welcome our new robot overlords.
Oh, yes, me too.
I look forward to serving them.
We here at Cinema Crespo Diso, we will not resist.
Cinema Robo Diso.
Robo Diso.
At Country Black, that's K-O-N-T-R-Y, Black. If you want to follow him on Twitter, what are our thoughts on making video games into movies? He compared it to, he feels lately that they've been making a lot of books into movies, which they've been doing that for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
As soon as they've been making movies, they've been making books into movies. But video games, it's been something that's been going down since early 90s.
Well, they're
It was when the video game movies started being made, right?
See, they're notoriously horrible.
I can't think of a single one that I like.
The Resident Evil movies are bad.
And they're the closest there are to good video game movies. The Resident Evil movies.
They are horrible. What else is there? There's
infamously the Super Mario Brothers film.
Is that
the first video game movie?
I'm not sure if it was the first, but it probably was.
Because there's no Pac-Man movies. There's no Q-Bert movies. No Burger Time movies.
Uh-huh. That I'm aware of.
So yeah, Super Mario Brothers, I think, was the first video game.
It started
game
off on a really bad foot. They did Street Fighter after that, and that was god awful as well.
Raul Julia's last film. So sad. That movie killed.
And they
me.
Keep cranking out those Street Fighter movies. They did.
They did make a few of them.
They did those Tekken movies.
I saw a little bit of a Tekken movie on G4 recently.
They made
awful.
They made a Far Cry movie.
I remember going to see Doom.
Oh
man! How could he make a Doom movie and then make it boring?
How
do you do that?
Yeah, it was really boring, and the first person shooting thing was really stupid.
Silent Hill has
a few moments
like this is a pretty decent horror film,
but it's
it has a lot of video game trappings that they threw in there, and it just by the end it's like, oh, this movie
is
awful.
The closest thing was Scott Pilgrim.
That's not based on a video game, though.
I know.
It's based on a comic book.
Exactly. And the video game's based on the movie, which is based on the comic book.
Yeah, it doesn't.
But it had video game elements.
But done cool. Done fun.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a great movie.
It's just one of those things. They're going to have to find something and take a big risk and break the mold.
Well, they're doing
Mortal
Kombat. Because they had all those Mortal Kombat movies. The first one made
God
a bunch
awful.
Of movies. They're all horrible, horrible films. But they're doing one now. Like a year and a half, 2 years ago, someone did a Mortal Kombat short film. I think they kind of did it on spec, like their own money. Someone had some connections, though. Like they have Michael Jai White in it. He plays a detective interviewing a dude who turns out to be Johnny Cage, is it?
Yeah,
or Liu Kang?
I think so.
One of the characters.
Yeah.
And Michael Jai White ends up being like Jax or something, you know. But it's actually like it's like a little trailer, a short like short film version of if this is what would happen if someone made a real gritty like Mortal Kombat movie. Like we're gonna send someone into an underground tournament and like this, we're trying to make a serious film. And they made a lot of waves. People really liked it. A lot of video game fans obviously liked it. Film people were interested. So they got that guy who wrote that short film. They got him to write a feature-length screenplay. They had him stretch it out, and now they're actually working on it.
Oh, nice.
They're making a feature-length Mortal Kombat movie based on this little short film that some guy just whipped up. So who knows? That could be one of the first good ones. Like an actual, legit, good, watchable movie. Halo should have been the first one.
Yeah.
Back in like 08.
But it didn't happen.
Never happened. That one didn't happen because, first off, Universal Studios and Fox? Is it Universal and Fox? Universal and Warner Brothers, one of those pairings. They decided to finance the film together. And it was they agreed to split the cost. They were going to split domestic, international. They had all this crazy financial shit worked out. That's how badly they wanted the movie made. But then the budget kept going up. First, Peter Jackson was producing it. And he was like, I can make this for $100 million. They're like, all right, cool, we can split that. Then he came back and was like, I need another $50. I can do it for $150 million. They're like, I don't know. And then he came back again. He was like,
I need like another $100
million. No. The straw that broke the camel's back was when he showed up a third time and said, I want to direct it. Like, who's this guy? Oh, Neil Blomkamp. He's a South African who hasn't made a feature-length film ever. We want you to hand the reins over to this guy. He's made a short film. Look at this short film. You know?
Yeah.
Let this guy make a Halo movie. And they're like, no, we're not doing that. So they pulled the plug. It didn't happen. Neil Blomkamp went on to make District 9 and blow people's faces off and make tons of money.
Yep.
And he would have made an incredible
Halo director, yeah.
If you go to YouTube, you search Neil Blomkamp. You might want to Google his name first to get the correct spelling. Go to Google. Google Neil Blomkamp. Get a spelling. Take that. Go to YouTube. And then search for Neil Blomkamp Halo commercials. Halo 3 commercials. And there's a series of commercials that when you play them all together, it's like 3-4 minutes. And it's pretty... what his Halo movie would have looked like, pretty much. It's pretty badass. You can do the same thing for the guy who did Snow White versus the Huntsman. He did the Halo commercials for, I think, ODST.
Yeah, I remember those.
And those were awesome. And if you go back and look at those and then look at some Snow White and the Huntsman stuff, you can see the crossover in style. And
yeah.
It's very interesting. Yeah, I guess that's still the only shot. I think that's still only the real shot for a good video game movie.
The only real
a Halo movie?
A Halo movie. Because I was saying, I mean, if someone...
Space Marines.
If someone wanted to take a risk, they could start a Zelda franchise and just blow people's faces off with fantasy
yeah,
stuff.
Over-the-top fantasy.
Those always make a lot of money if done right.
Yeah, Zelda. Zelda's cool. I like Zelda.
I mean,
great theme song.
Great theme song. And on top of it, you've got, I mean... there's so many video games that you could, you know, Zelda video games that you could draw from. You could do, you know, just take each video game, make it its own movie if you wanted.
Yeah, that's very true.
Because, you know, Link has gone from whatever age to whatever age and whatever dimension and blah this and blah that. And
that's very true. Yeah, I guess you could do... So if you want to go all out fantasy, you go with Zelda. If you want to go, like, action, space action, a little bit of horror, you go with Halo.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you could do, like, I mean, any of those... If you want to do a horror movie... I mean, there are so many horror-based video games these days with the Dead Space and the zombie stuff.
Yeah, remember The Suffering?
Yeah, oh,
that
my
was
God,
a
what
scary
a
as hell
scary
game.
Video. I used to scream like a little girl at, like, 3 o'clock like in the morning.
Yeah, that was a crazy
what
game.
You do is you get right... And then you play some video games, but
very late at night.
Very late at night.
With all the lights off.
All the lights off, and only the television blaring, and it's the scariest thing ever.
That game was scary as hell. A BioShock movie based on the first game would be very interesting.
Yeah.
Very
agreed.
Expensive. Actually, Gore Verbinski, the guy who did the Pirates movies, and he's doing Lone Ranger coming out soon. He was working on a BioShock movie for a little while before that plug got pulled.
Yeah.
Almost had a BioShock film. That would have been a crazy movie.
Yes, it would have.
So, but yeah, I don't know, man. It's dubious. Video games, for some reason, they all stink. There has not been a good one yet.
It's because they try to stick to, you know, the video game mold where you've got this story and then at the end there's a boss.
Yeah, sometimes they do, but then
and then it ends.
But then
and
there's also cases like Super Mario Brothers movie where they don't stick to the video game mold. There's nothing video game related to it at all. Actually, halfway through making that movie, someone told Bob Hoskins, who was playing Mario, that it was based on a video game. He was like, what? It's based on a video game? He had no idea.
Yeah.
That's weird. That's up there with Tommy Lee Jones being in Batman Forever and having no idea what was going on. Because he didn't. He only did it because his kids were like, oh, yeah, you should...
Be Two-Face.
You should be Two-Face. You should be in that movie. That'll be awesome. He was like, all right, whatever. They want to pay me $15 million. Sure, I'll do it. And he had no idea what was happening. I don't know about the video game movies. All right, another question here. This one's from Neil Hood. Asked us on Facebook. Cherry 2000 versus Weird Science. We both know Weird Science.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen Cherry 2000.
I've never seen Cherry 2000. I had to look it up. It sounds actually kind of interesting. It's an 80s movie.
Okay.
Obviously, it's why he mentions it, because it's an 80s movie. About a dude who has a like a cyborg girlfriend.
Okay.
Who she breaks down. So he has to go, and this girl, cyborg girlfriend, like, she's based on a real person. So he wants to go, like, on a cross-country road trip to find the real person. I think so they can make another cyborg or something. But anyway, but then he goes on this trip with some other girl to help him out.
And they fall in love.
And of course, yeah, at the end he falls in love with her because everyone saw that one coming from the start. I think just that sounds cool enough, but just based on the fact that everyone knows Weird Science and we haven't seen the Cherokee Chasm, we're gonna have to go with the Weird Science.
Unfortunately, sorry.
But thanks for the question, Neil. We appreciate it. All right, let's close things out with Billy D's question.
Billy D, question 18.
Here we go. Question 18 from Billy D. Question 18, episode 18. Hey, Chris and Doc, just saw a link on the old Book of Faces to quote, watch the first 4 minutes of Now You See Me. That's that.
The new magician movie.
Outside of theatrically released extended teases, a la Dark Knight, Mission Impossible 4, when has Watch X Minutes of Y before it hits theaters ever been a good sign? I can't think of one. Signed, Billy D.
I mean, agreed. It sounds like a desperate marketing attempt.
This is one of those things I really haven't noticed. But now that I think about it, yeah, I guess he's right.
It sounds like someone's grasping at straws. Please watch this movie.
I think they did this with Battle Los Angeles, which turned out to be not so hot. I'm having trouble thinking of specific times when they released like the first. But then again, like outside the three examples he gave, Mission Impossible, Dark Knight, and what was the other one? I forgot. Those are the only times when they've released something in theaters ahead of time, like to wet people's whistles because they knew that they had something good. I do feel like when they put out these links like a week or two before a movie comes out,
they're trying to shove it down your throat.
They're trying so hard to get your attention.
It seems desperate.
So I guess since he saw that for Now You See Me, that movie's going to be a big old piece of shit.
I hope not. It looked promising. I like Morgan Freeman's voice.
I like Morgan Freeman and Michael Caine and Michael Cera and Isla Fisher and Mark Ruffalo. It has a great cast. A lot of people that I like.
Yeah.
But Louis Leterrier is the director, and the guy is not known for...
directing well?
He's not known for subtlety and nuance.
Yeah.
Let's just say. He directed The Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton.
Yeah.
In which Ed Norton infamously tried to inject a lot of character work into it, a lot of Bruce Banner stuff, and then it all got cut out, and they had a big falling out. Louis Leterrier did one of the Transporter movies, maybe the second one?
They weren't that good.
Oh, no, he did Did he do the first one? No, he did the second one. Yeah, he did Transporter 2. He did Unleashed, which is actually...
All right.
Okay.
Bob Hoskins.
Was he in Unleashed? Bob Hoskins? I remember Morgan Freeman was in it.
Unleashed was the one with...
With Jet Li.
I thought Bob Hoskins was the one who owned Jet Li.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
Totally right. Louis Leterrier did Clash of the Titans, which was a hunk of shit.
Yeah.
And now You See Me, so I don't know. But this cast list, though, this is a cast
we'll see.
List that I like.
We'll see.
I feel like I'm missing someone from this list. Let me suppose up. Isla Fisher, Morgan Freeman, Mark Ruffalo, Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, Dave Franco, James Franco's little brother.
Yeah.
Melanie Laurent from Inglourious Basterds, Elias Koteas. I love Elias Koteas. Common is in it. Well, it's a good cast.
We'll see if the director's any good.
Nah, I'm not a big movie interior fan. I mean, he's done okay stuff. And then again, I have problems with movies about magic where the magic is obviously CGI.
Yes.
Because when you're watching the magic, you're watching an illusion, you already have to suspend disbelief that someone's doing a magic trick. And then they're asking you to double suspend your disbelief. It's a magic trick, but it's also CGI.
Yep.
We can't even do it for real illusion. We gotta fake it.
Yep.
We gotta double fake it.
Oh yeah, double fake.
Same thing happened in Burt Winterstone. There were a couple times where they're doing practical effects and you could tell that they were quote faking it for real.
Yeah.
And then there are times where they're faking it with CGI and it's like, oh, that CGI sucks, man. That's horrible shit.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be able to tell the difference.
You'll be able to tell. Well, I can tell in the trailer.
Yeah.
When they run off the building and then turn into money.
Yeah. They're not doing that for reals.
I don't know about that one. All right, well, on that note, we are out of here. We're done.
Deuces.
That was episode 18. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please make sure to tell your friends. Go on to iTunes. Let everyone know how much you enjoyed that episode. Rate us 5 stars. Check me out on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo. And check out the show at Crespo Diso. Hey, Drew, I noticed you've been tweeting a little bit lately.
Yeah, I'm falling into peer pressure.
All right. That's what I'm talking about. At Antihero419.
Correct. On Twitter and on Instagram.
So check him out. Yes, and on Instagram, Cinema Chris, but he's on Instagram. I keep forgetting to put that out there. So there you go. Get at us. We're going to have a good time for you next weekend, episode 19. You already got a guest. I ain't going to say who, but it's going to be awesome. You're going to enjoy it. You want to know who the guest is? Check out my Twitter feed. I'll let you know in a few days at I am Chris Crespo and at Crespo Diso. And I'm sure Drew
will retweet it. And I'm sure I'll retweet it.
At Antihero419. So thanks a lot, guys. We will see you soon-ish. Peace out.
Do it.
What? Cinema. Crespo. Diso. Cinema. Crespo. Diso. Thank you very much.